Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, and welcome to A Fine Time for Healing, a sanctuary for your emotional well-being. Your host is Randy Fine, author of the memoir Finally, and the inspirational self-help book Awaken from Life. Randy.
Good morning. Thank you for tuning in to listen to A Fine Time for Healing. I am your talk radio show host, Randy Fine. If you or someone you love has been suffering from depression and that you just cannot seem to find a solution, just hang on because help is on the way. We have this show is going to be about depression and about a new approach to treating it. And also, you're going to learn what the connection between a zebra and depression is. So hang on to that one because we're going to come back to that. Today we have with us Dr. James Greenblatt, MD. He is a dually certified child, adolescent, and adult psychiatrist specializing in treating patients with mood disorders and complex eating disorders. He's been doing this since 1990. He is a respected expert in integrative medicine and has traveled through the United States and abroad lecturing to physicians on the scientific basis for the integrative medicine of depression and eating disorders. He currently serves as the Chief Medical Officer and Vice President of Medical Services at Walden Behavioral Care in Waltham, Massachusetts. Dr. Greenblatt is also an assistant clinical professor in the Department of Psychiatry at Tufts University School of Medicine in Boston, as well as Dartmouth College in New Hampshire. And he is the author of the book we're going to be talking about today called Breakthrough Depression Solution, A Personalized Model for Relief from Depression. Perk your ears up. You're going to learn a lot today. Let me bring on my guest so we can get started. Good morning, Dr. Greenblatt.
Good morning, Randy. I appreciate being on your show today.
Oh, thank you so much for being my guest. We have a lot to talk about because I know a lot of people are suffering from depression. I know that it affects a great deal of, what are the statistics for how depression affects people?
The statistics are kind of mind-boggling. We think of not just the United States, but depression globally is right now the number two cause of disability, and within the next 5 years, it'll be the number one cause of disability, meaning impairing someone's ability to function. The rates are more common in women than men for adults, and it is a illness that has been researched as providing as much disability as some of the chronic illnesses that we think about, like diabetes, heart disease, and arthritis.
Okay. Now, what classifies depression as an illness?
Well, at this point, the field of psychiatry has a book of all these symptoms called the DSM, and every few years they change the symptoms. So right now, we make a diagnosis of depression based on those lists, And those lists for depression include things like sadness and feelings of hopelessness and helplessness, thoughts of death or suicide, lack of pleasure in normal activities, and perhaps sleep and appetite changes. What those lists don't do have any bearing on what might be contributing to those factors. So psychiatry is really just based on this model of symptomatic-based medicine. We just kind of have the symptoms, we make our list, and we call somebody depressed. And the whole premise of kind of a personalized approach is to try to understand what else might be contributing to the depression.
Okay. So your approach to treating depression is grounded in personalized medicine. What is personalized medicine?
Well, it's looking at the symptoms and trying to understand, is there some cause? And you know, I use the expression, you know, depression is not a Prozac deficiency, that we might have 10 adults with symptoms of depression and they're struggling, and there might be 10 different contributing factors. In the rest of medicine, we would do a blood test, a urine test, a MRI, a scan, a biopsy. We have all these tools to look at objective data to know what to treat. In medicine, we just keep going back, in psychiatry, I'm sorry, we just keep going back to that list of symptoms. And so we have no measure of the biomarker or the physiology. So a personalized approach is starting to look for these measures. We look for nutritional deficiencies. We look for the functioning of the GI tract. We look for mineral deficiencies and other metabolic problems that might be contributing, like celiac disease can often contribute to depression.
So, and once you determine these things, so basically it's kind of a rule, you try to rule out the physiological triggers?
Correct. And for some individuals, let's say a B12 deficiency, I just saw a very depressed adolescent who's been to multiple doctors, and when we saw her, she had a profound B12 deficiency. With B12, her depression lifted. This is after a year of unsuccessful treatment. For some individuals, we actually find the underlying cause. For others, it's just helping the medications work better and or therapy work better. And for some individuals that might have strong family histories, we don't necessarily find an underlying nutritional or metabolic problem, and then we focus on personalized the approach to which medicines could be helpful.
Now, how common is your approach in your field?
Well, it's certainly growing. In the old days, I was primarily speaking to a small group of physicians and integrative medicine doctors and chiropractors and naturopaths. And now, you know, I'm being asked to talk at grand rounds at traditional academic medical centers because the research is out there on vitamins and minerals affecting, you know, heart health, cancer, and it's slowly beginning to be understood that nutrition and hormones and other physiological factors affect the brain and mental illness as well.
Now, if someone was looking for a psychiatrist and, you know, they're trying to go through the vetting process, would they ask if the doctor is a personalized medicine practitioner?
I think the bigger term might be an integrative medicine doctor, someone trained in integrative medicine or is respectful of integrative medicine. Many psychiatrists will say they know nothing about it, but there are more and more individuals taking trainings and seminars and are familiar with this information.
Okay. I mean, that's really good information for people to have because other than, you know, going on WebMD or whatever, you can, you know, see how physicians are rated. It's very hard to just pick a doctor, especially one that's going to take the time to really create something that's specific for you, the treatment that is the best for you.
Absolutely. There's an organization called Integrative Medicine for Mental Health, IMMH, and I think that could be easily found on the web. And there's a group where they list many doctors around the country that are, you know, trained in this kind of work.
Okay, that's great. Where are you located at?
I'm in the Boston area.
You're in Boston, okay. And do you treat specifically in your office, or do you do Skype or any of those things, long-distance treatment?
No, for you know, for the states that I'm licensed in, we do consultations, Connecticut, Massachusetts. For states that we're not licensed, we can't prescribe medicine, but we'll do consults with sometimes the physician in the area, the psychiatrist, as well as helping patients understand some of the nutritional information and not prescribing.
Okay. In your book, you talk about something called the tomato effect. And it's about, it explains why the medical community is so slow to recognize nutritional therapy, the benefit of it in mental health. What exactly is the tomato effect, and why is it named that?
Well, I just thought that was a kind of brilliant analogy. It was an article written in the 80s by two physicians that talked about how it's very hard for the medical community to kind of make changes of what the kind of the paradigm is, the medical model at the time is. And it was based on the fact for almost 200 years in this country, we wouldn't eat tomatoes because we just assumed they were part of the nightshade family, which meant they were poisonous. And even though they were eating tomatoes in Europe and people in the America, this from 1600 on, just refused to eat tomatoes. And in 1800, someone stood up in the square of Salem, New Jersey, ate a basket of tomatoes, didn't die, and, you know, the rest is history. But we were so, the cultural paradigm, if you will, is that tomatoes are poisonous. And I use that analogy to talk about how sometimes simple nutritional interventions are very hard for my medical colleagues to accept. You know, I mentioned the B12 because it is so simple and such a profound effect on someone's mental health and often physical health that medical colleagues aren't just checking B12 levels and aren't giving the B12 shots that might make a difference.
So is that a kind of a first line of approach for most everyone? So people could go and have their B12 levels checked and see if that could be a contributing factor?
Yes. I mean, the work that I'm doing now are usually individuals that have struggled and seen many doctors. So we do a battery of tests. We try to look at many nutritional deficiencies, metabolic problems, genetic problems, trace minerals and vitamins to give a broad picture to be able to make a personalized treatment plan. But, you know, a simple approach could be looking at B12 levels and vitamin D levels that any physician could do that almost all insurances would cover. And that could make a big difference in someone's ability to tolerate a medication and or symptoms improve.
Okay. I mean, I know I take B12 every day because it gives me a boost. I don't drink coffee. So that's how I basically start my day with B12.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
And there are some individuals that can take a pill and do fine. There are other individuals that their levels are so low and they have a poor difficulty absorbing it that we need to give them B12 shots to really replete their B12.
Okay, and how often would someone have those shots?
Depending on the level, it's usually a couple times a week to start, and then it might be a monthly kind of maintenance injection. Everyone is different, and that's why we're monitoring levels as well as symptoms.
Okay. So let's talk a little bit about the mental illness stigma in our culture and why people want to just explain it away. They think because it's a brain thing that you can think yourself out of these issues. What is that about, and how can we change that?
Well, I think it's slowly changing, but certainly not fast enough. It is very hard for men in particular, for many adults and to ask for help. The shame and the stigma associated with depression and mental illness is still preventing many people from getting the help they need. It's also preventing, you know, the kind of governmental kind of agencies to give the care. I mean, the amount of money that we spend for someone with a kidney disorder, hundreds of thousands of dollars, but we're regulating how many therapy sessions or how long someone needs to be in a hospital for depression. It is really a tragedy. And, you know, the suicide rates that have just skyrocketed in the past 15 years, most of the suicides are individuals that have struggled with depression but were not in treatment. And, again, why weren't they in treatment? And the stigma and the shame of, I think, mental illness is part of it.
Yeah, I mean, I know, I guess back in the early 1900s, you know, they put people away. They institutionalized people who weren't in their right minds, or so they would say. So I guess it goes back to that kind of thing, that people are afraid of being thought of as crazy. And the other thing is that they don't want people don't want it on their medical record because they don't want it to be judged by a future employer or someone like that. So hopefully this will become more and more of an understood illness, and, you know, in the appropriate way, that it is an illness and not just something we can think ourselves out of. You say that anxiety and neuroticism are strongly linked to depression. Explain what anxiety and neuroticism are and how they are linked to depression.
Well, I think in kind of the integrative world, if you're deficient in certain nutrients like magnesium or B12, then oftentimes there's a host of symptoms, and anxiety is often what we call comorbid, coexisting with depression. So very, very high rates of both symptoms in our patients struggling with depression, and oftentimes the medicines aren't sufficient to treat both conditions, and that's where an integrative approach can be particularly helpful, because we're trying to get at the underlying cause that's contributing.
Right. And so many people are put on multiple medications. And that can, I guess it can be beneficial if you, you know, it's a pot shot, if you hit it right. But it can also cause more complications, can it?
Yeah, I think part of the reason we wrote the book is that, you know, very frustrated with the psychiatry at this point, which is mostly trial and error, you know, polypharmacy. So we're just adding a second medicine, a third medicine, a fourth medicine if someone's not feeling better, rather than a, you know, more thoughtful approach, looking at some of the genetic tests to help us predict which medicines would work. And if one medicine's not helping, then stopping it. Because the side effect profiles, we're giving medications to our patients where the side effect profile potentially of weight gain, of horrible withdrawal symptoms, and even suicide is a possible side effect for our young adults on these medicines, including diabetes, et cetera. So we need to be really careful, and we can't just add meds without a careful understanding of how someone's doing.
Right. I know someone who was having terrible anxiety, and she was on a ADHD drug. And
stimulant, yeah.
Her psychologist recommended to her psychiatrist that she take this ADHD drug. She was suffering from many, many mental health problems. And she went to a psychiatrist who just put her on it. And she was having extreme anxiety, you know. And I said to her, do you think it could be related to your ADHD medication? Because I know Adderall can create anxiety. And it just appalled me that someone would just prescribe that and not really understand that this is a person who has anxiety to begin with. And that can be very frustrating. I'm sure it is to you as well.
Yeah, again, it's that kind of trial and error that we're just projecting to the patients, just try this, see if it helps. And then with poor follow-up, so if someone starts a stimulant, which can cause anxiety, and then asked to come back 3 months later, you're not really able to follow the effects and understand if it's helpful or not.
Right. So when you see a patient initially, how often do you follow up with them until you get it, you know, get them squared away?
It depends. If I'm doing medications and nutrition, then I would meet with them within the first month, and usually phone check-ins within the first week or two. If we're just doing kind of a nutritional metabolic workup, once we get all the testing back, then it's between 1 and 3 months, because the nutritional supplements don't work as quickly, but they provide a rich kind of solid foundation for recovery, and so we don't need to check in as much. With the medications, we want to check in much more frequently, because most of the side effects, particularly the suicidal ideation, occurs within the first 2 to 4 weeks. We want to be able to monitor the side effects to medications.
Now, if someone comes in with extreme depression, is there a way to alleviate the level of it? In other words, to diminish the level a little bit so that they can function better? Is there a quicker approach to that, or is this still just an investigative kind of thing until you figure it out?
Well, I think if we kind of have that big picture metabolic package, then we know if there's something contributing to it, we can treat that aggressively. The antidepressants can take 2 to 4 weeks, sometimes 6 weeks, so it's not a quick process. There is research being done on these ketamine infusions where people are noticing dramatic response, you know, within 24 hours, but then it's only lasting for a week or two. So this is an anesthetic that's been used, and also that there's been clinics set up around the country for these infusions. And there's more research being done, and they're trying to make pharmaceuticals based on this mechanism so we can get more quick responses for our patients struggling.
Hmm. Well, that's good news. That is really good news.
Yes.
But, you know, depression, some people can get depression as a result of something that happened in their life, an event, and then that can be helped, and then it will go away, right? Some people have depression just as kind of part of their genetic makeup, and they may feel depression from time to time. So can you talk a little bit about the different kinds or different ways that people fall into a depressive state?
Sure, but I think kind of the fallacy, one of the reasons people don't seek treatment enough is that if they can identify a cause, I got divorced, I lost my business, you know, a relative died, and so that's why I'm depressed, and 6-12 months later I'm still depressed, oftentimes they don't seek treatment because they have that thing to focus on or blame.
Okay.
And it's really important that even though there are causes and tragedies and stress and even traumas in our life, when someone develops a major depressive disorder and it persists for an extended period of time, the physiological changes that take place in the body and the brain still can be treated, you know, with medication, supplements, and or therapy, regardless of the cause. But the other thing you mentioned, which is really important, there are individuals that are just genetically prone. There's a family history of depression, and there might not be precipitants, that they might have a pretty good life with no major stresses, and they develop these depressive periods either once or often throughout their life, and those are more kind of genetically driven without particular causes, but also can be treated.
Okay. Now, I work with many people that are victims of narcissistic abuse, and there is information that shows that when children are verbally or physically or sexually abused, that it can actually alter the brain chemistry for the rest of their life, which makes their mood regulation, emotional regulation, more difficult. Do you have anything to say in regard to that?
Yes, two extremes. One is that you know, we're always kind of looking at genetic vulnerabilities with the environment. So there are certainly genetic traits that, and we've done studies in abusive homes, and certain genetic traits, kids do better and kids do worse. So we have that genetic environmental fact, and certainly someone living in that kind of traumatic home life is going to have a profound effect. And what's going to happen is we know that this early life adversity can actually shift the genes. So the expressions of genes are changing during that trauma. So the optimistic part of me, knowing that both the brain can change, and we have both meds and supplements that can kind of support this, what we call this epigenetic process, which means to help change the genes back into a more healthy functioning. So there are always things that we can do, and we used to think the brain didn't change and cells, new cells didn't grow, but we now know that the brain is changing and cells do grow throughout our lives.
Okay, all right. That's good to know. So in part of your evaluation, do you discuss childhood or do you just discuss current issues?
No, I think, you know, when I see a patient, they're usually seen for an hour or more by a social worker, not only discussing childhood, but discussing family history. And the longer that I do this, I'm practicing almost 30 years, the more time we take doing a three-generation family history. And and that helps us understand the genetics as well as some of the family dynamics for the child growing up in their homes. It's critically
that
important.
That is so great to hear. And, you know, because I know so many people are struggling and they just don't know where to turn. And it's wonderful to know that that is being integrated into psychiatry because I know working with these people who suffer from this that it's a lifetime of suffering, and until it can be identified the root cause of, you know, of where all this comes from, it becomes very difficult for them to recover. So, you know, that's just one aspect. So tell us,
yes.
Tell us why you wrote the book. Because it takes a lot to sit down and write a book. What precipitated that?
Well, I mean, part of it was, you know, my colleagues started taking, you know, two different camps. And there are psychopharmacologists that only prescribe meds, and they know nothing about nutrition. And they, without even reading the article, say, though, this doesn't work. And then there are colleagues of mine that were frustrated with the psychopharm med approach and turned to nutrients and are now spending their career saying meds are evil and they're killing our children. And I was just trying to bridge that those world, because no one's thinking about the patient sitting in front of them, you know, that depressed, maybe suicidal patient, and can benefit both from a nutritional metabolic workup and might benefit from the right medication. So it was really kind of an attempt to put together an integrative, personalized approach to help so many of our, you know, friends, colleagues, and family members that are suffering from depression.
So your book just was published in May, right? Became available in May. Okay.
In December. I'm sorry. We finished a two-year project, which is a textbook for psychiatrists. So it's like 600 pages, 3,000 references, a very academic textbook on the same topic, integrative therapies for depression. So hopefully that'll be used by, you know, professionals to start getting this information.
Exactly. So the book Breakthrough Depression Solution is more for the individual suffering than it is for the professional.
It's written for both, but clearly the goal was for a patient who's been not happy necessarily with their current treatment, looking for how to understand where nutrition might fit in. And it's not just taking a pill someone in the health food store recommended. It's really looking at how you can find out what might be helpful for you.
Okay. In your book, you talk about food allergies and depression, and I know that I've experienced that. I know that I have problems with sugar and dairy, and I know as a child I was really moody, you know, and I had a lot of that. My mother gave me a lot of sugar and dairy, and so I watched that in my diet. But can you talk a little bit about, you know, how diet, those kind of things can affect depression? Or create depression?
Sure. You know, again, everyone's different. There are, you know, people that can eat junk food and sugar and live to 100 and, you know, be fine. And there are other individuals that the refined sugar really sets up a vicious a cycle of mood swings, irritability, and they need to be much more careful. you know, I call sugar a nutritional vacuum cleaner. It depletes lots of nutrients, B vitamins in particular, and those are all needed for the neurotransmitters in our brain to make the chemicals that help us, you know, feel better and focus and pay attention. So sugar is, for most people, can be destructive and affect moods, and not for everyone. And then the food allergies also, it's a big part of our workup for all children because I think it contributes to a lot of behavior problems. For adults, it really varies, but most individuals will know when they're sensitive, and we also have tests as to be able to help predict which food someone might be more sensitive to.
Okay. Well, that's good to know. That's good to know. So we're about halfway into, half an hour into the show, and I want to give you the opportunity to talk about anything that you think is important that maybe we haven't discussed yet, or, you know, anything as far as what you're up to or how people can contact you.
Well, great, thank you. I mean, I've hit on some of the items I wanted to, which is really that there is a personalized approach that for our, you know, treatment of depression. You don't have to follow one camp, just meds or just supplements. And the process is confusing. So maybe the area that I would just want to share with your listeners is, you know, when you read a headline, there was a recent headline that omega-3 fatty acids don't help depression. It's a big research study. And if we take, 100 patients, omega-3 fatty acids might not help everyone with depression. And that's not a personalized approach. That's a statistical analysis. And I agree. But if we had 10 individuals who are struggling with depression, there could be one or two where these essential fatty acids, which are found in fish oil, if you will, might be the underlying problem and could affect depression. And those are the patients we need to identify and treat. So the real goal is looking for what might be contributing for you. And all that information is on our website, James Greenblatt, MD.
Now, you know, so many people want a quick fix to things. Do people get frustrated with the process of, you know, that you're not going to just give them a medication? Or are they coming to you because you don't just give them a medication?
That's a great question. A lot of people come to me and because they think I won't give them medicine. You know, they're looking for an herb or a vitamin, and they leave with a prescription of Prozac. Other people come to me looking for medications, and I won't give it to them, and I write a prescription for a B12 shot. So I think patients in the past have felt comfortable because I'm able to hear where they're coming from and what they're looking for. And for some patients who are very depressed, wouldn't want to take medicines because they saw the side effects in a relative or their parents. After a couple months, if we've looked at a nutritional approach and it has not helped, then we can both say that they have tried, they're still struggling, and perhaps we can try a medication. And perhaps if we look clearly at some of these genetic tests, we might do a better job picking the right medicine so you have less side effects, and then they're more comfortable.
So some people come in and they're coming in because they want medication. And does that frustrate them? Or they just, once you begin to explain, they begin to calm down and are willing to listen?
Absolutely. I mean, once I say that, you know, your B12 is so low, it's probably been that way for years. In, 30 days, if it doesn't help you, then absolutely, let's think about a medication. But at this point, I know you'll likely be feeling better, and we should try this.
Okay. That's a great approach. Well, you've been doing this for many years. How many years have you been practicing, Dr. Greenblatt? What?
It's about 26 years now.
Okay. So you know what you're doing. to say the least.
I've been doing it for a while and mostly learning from my patients who've really shared with me what they're looking for. What they need, and they need a big picture approach, and they need to be heard.
Right. We all need to be heard. We really do, and that's I don't know. That's so lacking in most experiences with physicians these days. I don't know. It gets very frustrating. I live in Florida, and I think it's worse here. I think it's more of a factory situation down here. But
yes.
Yeah, because I'm originally from Baltimore, and I don't remember it being like that. Yeah, a little bit better there. All right. So, what else did I want to ask you?
You want to talk a little bit about the zebra approach?
Oh my gosh, we're coming. I completely forgot. Thank you. I want to talk about the zebra approach. Yes.
Okay. Well, I mean, it was just a mnemonic that we came up with to kind of help people think about the kinds of things they should be looking for in an evaluation of depression. And the way I came up with the zebra is that I heard as a kid and then found out to be true that every zebra has a unique stripe pattern. So there are no two zebras with the exact same stripe pattern. And so that was kind of the model for that, you know, individuality, that everyone's different. I like the term, when I started practice, I used to give away a book called You Are Extraordinary, and helping people see that individuality. And they're biochemically individual as well. So each of the letters in the zebra just refers to, you know, different things like take care of yourself with sleep and sugar. H is for hormones. E is for exercise and energy and zinc. And Z is for zinc. And E is for essential fatty acids. And E is for exercise. And R is for restore the gut and, you know, probiotics, and A is for, you know, amino acids and protein. So it just goes through the kinds of nutritional and metabolic factors that could be contributing to depression, and helping people see that they might be different than someone else struggling with depression.
It's a very cute analogy. Zebras are very cute. I love that. And you like zebras, right? You said when you were a child, you really liked zebras.
Yeah, I loved them, and then when I was out in Arizona, and, you know, you realize, you know, you can't kind of domesticate. It's very hard to put a saddle on a zebra the way we've done with horses. So I like that spirit and that freedom of a zebra, absolutely.
Is there a risk when medicating children?
There's huge risk in medicating children. A major study came out in 2004, I believe. No, it was a little earlier, in 2001, talking about the use of an antidepressant called Paxil for the treatment of children. It was the first study that said it is okay, these medications do work, and they were effective for adolescent depression. Before that, we had adult drugs, but we couldn't utilize those for kids because they weren't approved. So this study came out. The incidence of antidepressants went way up. And then all of a sudden, in 2004, the FDA came up with a black box warning which said antidepressants cause suicidal ideation. Last year, a group went back to that original data, and it was called the reanalysis of Study 529, published in the British Journal of Psychiatry. And they showed that the data that was published to show that this medication was helpful was completely false. And the new revision of the same data said that the Paxil was not helpful for adolescent depression, and there was a higher incidence of suicidal behavior in those that took Paxil. So I think long-winded way of describing that, yes, we have to be careful with these kids. I believe the medications likely contribute to increased suicidal ideation. Again, it's mostly in the first 2 to 4 weeks, so we need to monitor and ask the question. I also believe they can be used safely for those with severe depression, but monitored really carefully.
Okay, that's a good answer. And one more thing I wanted to ask you is in your chapter 22, where you talk about the future treatment of depression, you talk about one of the new modalities, which is called transcranial magnetic stimulation. What is that?
Well, if you can just imagine sitting in a dental chair and someone move, rather than an x-ray machine, they move a magnet to one side of your head, and it's, you know, magnetic stimulation to, you know, part of your brain. It is not painful. It's not invasive. It's just resting on your head, and it's safe with no very few side effects. So it caught on very quickly and been looked at for depression, and the studies are pretty good. You know, we've used it many times, and it doesn't help everyone, but it has shown to be more and more effective. It can be very costly, and it's time-consuming. People spend, you know, 4 or 5 days a week getting the magnetic stimulation for a month. But it is magnets to the brain that's been shown to be helpful for depression.
Very interesting. And that's available now?
Available. Yeah, it's growing. And insurance companies are now beginning to pay for it as well. I think the insurance companies are looking for failures of two medications, but they're beginning to pay for that.
Okay. We're running out of time, but I want to ask you very, very briefly, because my husband and I just purchased a Massage Envy business. And I know massage can be very beneficial for so many aspects of well-being. Can it be beneficial for depression?
Absolutely. There's, you know, the second part of the book is called Nurturing the Mind, where we talk about both spirituality, mindfulness, yoga. And we don't particularly mention massage, but there are some research looking at both adolescents and adults. So one, physical contact can be incredibly helpful, and then the whole concept of the relaxation or the fancy term mindfulness that goes with massage absolutely can be an important part of treatment for some individuals.
Okay, that's really good to know. Well, I've got to say goodbye to you. This has been fantastic. I've learned a lot. I know that my listeners have, and I want to thank you so much for being my guest today and for writing this phenomenal book. Again, the book is this. We're talking to Dr. James Greenblatt, G-R-E-E-N-B-L-A-T-T, double T's, and the book is Breakthrough Depression Solution, A Personalized Model for Relief from Depression. So thank you so much for being my guest today, and I wish you great success with your book. I know it's not about the success, it's about getting it out there. So in
great.
That vein,
well, thank you,
great success.
Good luck to you. Thanks again.
Thank you
Bye-bye.
So much. Bye-bye. So we are out of time for today, but if you have any comments or questions about today's show, you can email me at loveyourlife@randygfine.com. That's loveyourlife@randigfine.com. And also visit my website, randygfine.com. Just kind of flip around there. You could spend hours on my website if you'd like. There's so many articles and links to shows. And also a page that links to the mental health practitioners, mental health practice that I do with certain issues. So if you would like to check that out, you can go to randygfine.com and go to Fine Life Issues Counseling and see what I do as far as that goes. And I love to interview doctors like Dr. Greenblatt because it helps me to be able to help my patients and send them in the right direction. So thanks so much. If you'd like to listen to my shows, they're all archived after broadcasting, and they can be listened to at Blog Talk Radio, iTunes, or through the show links on my website, like I mentioned. So thanks again for tuning in and listening to A Fine Time for Healing. This is Talk Radio show host, author, and life issues counselor Randy Fine signing off until next time. May joy and serenity always be yours. Goodbye.
Thanks for listening. You can find out more about Randy at her website, Randy G. Fine, RANDIGFINE.com. Join her next time for more of A Fine Time for Healing.
Hard not to hesitate, but we can't wait to be.